information where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.
Over at the arch and in the direction of the City of London, straight down the Mall, flying low, over Buckingham Palace, in tribute to Queen's Diamond Jubilee.
It's Sunday, the 5th of June 2012, and I'm currently sitting at home watching the footage of Queen's Diamond Jubilee celebrations in London. And as I'm recording this episode, I'm just seeing the flyby occurring, the Lancaster bomber flying by over Buckingham Palace. And Peter Paul is going to be joining me shortly. And we just want to provide something in the way of a reaction, really, to the weekend's events. For those that aren't living in the UK, it's been Jubilee centric for the last 4 days. It's been a national holiday for Monday and Tuesday. I'd like to actually make a correction. It's the Tuesday, but that gives you some sort of perspective into how I'm currently feeling, because it feels like a Sunday. But this has been a 4 day weekend for those of us living in the UK. And there's thousands of people in London watching this flyby, which is occurring. I'm just watching a shot of the Queen smiling as the planes fly by. And it's all very jolly. Yeah, it's Charles. Slightly rainy, bit of cloud. But I've been keeping a close eye on what's been going on. And the impression I've had for the last few days of watching this footage is a sort of mixed sense of national pride, which I do sometimes have. Not all the time, I'm not particularly patriotic, but I've also had a sense of the masses kind of being sheep, kind of taking it all in at face value, turning up to this grand event in London and just sort of taking it all in. So Peter's just joined me.
Hi.
And hi Peter. So I've just been sort of saying, you've missed the flyby.
Oh.
But I've just been saying my reaction to this whole extended weekend of events in the UK for the Jubilee. I've had a sort of odd sense of national pride occasionally kind of hit me, but I'm not a particularly patriotic person, but you can't help but get sort of suckered in by all this stuff sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I can't help but feel that the masses of people watching us in London, you can't help but see them as sheep sometimes. They kind of just lap it all up at face value. And no matter how many times people like David Icke and numerous other people try and talk at length about the reality of the royal family and those that control the world, people just lap it up. They love it. So there's some shots of soldiers firing their SA-80s up into the sky.
Yeah, guys on the palace guards, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I was listening to it on the radio, and Sunday, wasn't it? We had so many bank holidays, I'm losing track of the days.
Yeah, I got the days mixed up.
With the barge, I listened to it on the radio, Radio 5 Live, and then I went down to Wetherspoons of West Street in Brighton, a big pub, I watched it there. Oddly enough, it was interesting on Radio 5, they were saying that a lot of people couldn't actually get to the river, and the bridges were closed, you couldn't go on there for security reasons.
Right.
They were keeping them away from a lot of the places were closed off and were made like corporate arenas, so a lot of people went there and couldn't get to the actual side of the river and they were getting disgruntled.
Right.
So there was a little side to this that hasn't sort of been publicised so much.
Been televised, certainly.
That, yeah. Around the edges of it, it's not everyone getting to the side of the river and seeing it all clearly.
No.
And down at the pub I went to, in fact, no one was watching the screen at all. It was just some chavs sort of having an argument about something by the bar, the kind of pub it is, you've been in there.
Yep.
It's no, Rover's Return type place. But
no.
Even so, I was the only person watching it on the screen. I was interested to see the various boats and the barge and that. But I thought everyone would be in there looking at it, and no one was at all. So
no.
I don't know whether that was just because they weren't bothered or they were somewhere else, but...
Well, I mean, I've had an interesting weekend. I've been sort of involved with some of the celebrations, not a lot of it, but there was a big concert in Brighton on Saturday, and it was a local DJ who's quite well known internationally called Fatboy Slim, and he always puts on a big event in Brighton every now and again. He tries to, at least. Sometimes the local council prevent it because it always turns into a bit of a messy occasion. There were some deaths actually a few years ago and on the seafront. Somebody jumped over the cliff walk, fell off by mistake. But what I was sort of struck by really was there's a sort of celebratory mood in the UK at the moment because of this event. But it's always just an excuse really for people to just get paralytically drunk and to just live this sort of hedonistic lifestyle where really all they really want to be interested in doing and all they really look forward to on the weekend is to drink to excess and throw up on the sidewalks and to make a general fool of themselves and to wake up in the morning with a horrible hangover. And I have to be honest, I mean, that was my real reaction to the event in Brighton on Saturday, which was held at the Amex, which is a new football stadium in Brighton, which was obviously there for the football, but this was one of the events they have had on there recently. I was just sort of shocked at the level of drunkenness and just loutish, chavvy behaviour, and it makes me sound really snobby, I know, but unfortunately that is something you see all the time in the UK, and it seems to be a sort of national problem that I don't think many other countries necessarily have such an issue with. But I saw so many celebrations going on in the streets, these sort of Jubilee parties, and I walked past one the other day, and you just see beer cans all over the floor, all over the street. You just see, you know, the sort of telltale signs of a sort of drunken party where everyone's really basically just used it as an excuse to get really pissed. And I just think a lot of this really is the masses just seeing it like a sort of cinematic event where they can kind of be a part of it in some really kind of artificial way, where in fact they're not a part of any of the celebrations, they're just an onlooker, they're a spectator.
As we're talking,
we are watching the footage, and you know, some of it's interesting, and some of it just reminds you.
If you look at her, and if David Icke says he's a shape-shifting reptile, I can't quite believe it. In a way, you know what I mean. It doesn't seem a body you'd want to really spend 50 years, 60, 70 years, just walking about, shaking hands, and you know, going to lots of fates. Is that really what you'd want to do if you were a shape-shifting reptile to rule the world? I don't know. Or is it just a kind of a cover that's sort of so innocuous that you can appear innocent while having a lot of power? But it's only power to go around lots of rather boring events, and you know what I mean?
It's kind of a
figurehead, really. I feel a bit sorry for her in a way, because I think the Rockefellers and Rothschilds probably have their kind of wild lives outside of the public arena, and in a way the Windsors are kind of there as a front. So they've made a deal, perhaps, to kind of have that wealth, but they have to serve a certain figurehead role.
Yeah.
In a way, it's a sort of trap.
And of course, Philip has been taken ill, so he's not there on the balcony today. I don't think he was at the concert yesterday with the likes of Cliff Richard, Elton John, Paul McCartney, etc.
But he's not the same bloodline, of course.
No.
He goes through the maternal line. I have heard he's actually quite a nice guy. He's not bothered about the roles.
He
just happened to be trapped in the situation.
That is interesting.
He always has a joke with the workmen and stuff, you know, when off camera when they're at these events. He has a bit of a joke, and then he has to go and play the role.
And of course, now we have the pundits on the BBC providing sort of commentary, and you get all these royalists on here, Piers Morgan and the like. And this is sometimes the part that frustrates me the most, actually. It's the way the media handle the event. It's sort of a sycophantic way of reporting the event. And it's not just going on in the UK. I mean, the impression we get certainly here is that this is big in the US as well, and all the main international news channels, CNN, ABC, etc., are recording and watching this footage.
They'll be relayed anyway, whatever. They'll be on a feed.
Yeah, absolutely. They're probably just tapping into the same feed. And it puts Britain on the centre stage, of course. It puts London right at the front of people's sort of psyche at the moment.
But if you're looking at it if you go back to 2005,
yeah,
you had the Olympics announced, it was all very jolly, then you had 7-7.
Mm.
So if, it's just if it, there's a conspiratorial edge to this year, we probably believe there is, but let's never be wholly didactic in our approach, because it may all be a load of bollocks and not happen. But if we were taking that view, this could be softening up, get everyone jolly, jolly, think of the Queen. The souvenir books will come out in a week or two. They get them printed so fast nowadays.
Yeah.
They'll be on sale during the Olympics for anyone who wants to buy them, who comes here. So it creates that sort of patriotism. Bear in mind, this isn't actually the Jubilee year. They moved it to this year to make it tie in with the Olympics.
Interesting.
So it's just a year they thought would tie in with 2012 and the Olympics, to do it all in one go.
Yeah, and I mean, that's an interesting point, because it could be one of those scenarios where they're trying to get the kind of masses happy and excited and jolly, as they say, but then an event could unfold in the next few weeks or months during the Olympics that creates a big downer, and it's sort of like an up and down style, which in reality generates more fear and gives them what they want, which is a sort of more darker mood out there.
Well, like I said, in 2005 that was done.
Yeah, it was, absolutely.
So we can look at the patterns before. But have you mentioned the Bilderberg meeting?
No, I haven't yet.
So from, I think it was last Thursday through to Sunday in Chantilly, Virginia, United States, the Bilderberg were having their meeting, which is every 4 years. But it's every year, but every 4 years it goes to the States, and they've chosen that particular hotel this year. And Alex Jones is doing a very good live broadcast from there on Thursday night, which I listened to on the same evening. God, it's Tony Blair.
Nasty.
What does that tell you?
It's just appeared on
the
screen.
He went to in fact, there's a very interesting local connection to Bilderberg this year round, because we're in Hove in southern England. And in 2005, the Conservative candidate for Hove was a guy called Nicholas Bowles, who stood in this constituency. He's now Nicholas Bowles MP in another constituency, having got elected, not in that election, but in the subsequent election in 2010. And he's a guest at the Bilderberg meeting this weekend.
Right.
So I've actually seen him in Hove, giving a Hustings meeting with other candidates. So he's being groomed for something, because you get asked there when you're being brought into the inside a bit. So when Blair went there.
Yeah.
Major went there, you know, Cameron's been there. When they're going to become more powerful, they get asked there.
Yeah.
So it could be the Nicholas Bowles might be a name to look out for in politics quite soon.
Interesting.
Maybe later this year. If Cameron gets taken out by the 1922 committee, which could happen, then it may be that someone like Nicholas Bowles could be coming in as a new leader.
Right. It's a shame there, just seeing on the screen as you were speaking there, you see the likes of Michael Palin, and you think, I mean, they're great people, they're great entertainers. I mean, Palin's legendary, but you kind of wish that some of these celebrities they kind of had a bit more of an insight into perhaps the alternative views. I mean, perhaps they do, but when you get them on screen like this, like I say, the words I always sort of think of is they're sort of sycophants, like they kind of lap it all up, and it's a typical BBC fashion mainstream media reporting, I guess. But wouldn't it be interesting to have a media that would report an event like this but add a sort of element of anti-royalism to it, and sort of say, is this really what we should be watching as taxpayers? Or but I mean, you'd never get that, certainly not on the BBC.
Well, you've had the odd Republican demonstration, and there's been a bit of reporting of that, more on the radio probably than on TV.
Oh, yeah.
I think TV, you tend to get the visuals, like here, you can just point the camera at anything and it's going to look good, whereas on radio you've got to keep talking and coming up with some material, so you have to sort of say, well, what's going on, there's someone over there with a banner or something. You have to say it when you've got this gold braid and stuff you can point a camera at, it's always going to look good.
Yeah.
Or the Union Jacks, the telephoto lens, compressing perspective up, so it looks very dense to the eye. Very interesting to see the Shard, a great big tower built by London Bridge Station, going to be capped off a little bit later in the year, probably around the Olympics time. Pyramidical.
Right.
Very New World Order, sort of rearing up over the whole thing in certain shots. It's interesting whether that's some sort of deliberate transposing of images, whether they built that to kind of coincide, I don't know.
Yeah.
They certainly did plan these things a long way ahead.
Yeah, and I mean, in terms of symbolism, there has been a little bit of it. I mean, the obvious, I think, was last night during the the concert they put on outside Buckingham Palace, you had the moment where the Queen lit the national flame, or whatever it is they called it, and then that acted as a catalyst for all these other beacons around the UK to get lit. I think there was one down where we are, a couple in fact, down on the south coast. And that's all eternal flame symbolism. It's all, the Illuminati's eternal flame, sort of, we hold the knowledge, all that kind of thing, which is all stuff that we don't really need to go into in detail, because we feel that most people that listen to our podcast know about a lot of this symbolism.
They've got all the demonstrations out the way, like Occupy London. Yeah. They just showed that St Paul's have obviously got that well out the way.
Yeah.
They've got old Brian Hall been swept out of the way. Well, he died, of course, but his demonstration's out the way as well for the various horse cavalry to walk up and down outside Parliament. So they've obviously cleaned the area up quite a lot.
Yeah, it's interesting, and it's all winding down now. I mean, you on the TV screen, you're already starting to get a sense of people are leaving the area. I don't know for sure, but I think that was the last major sort of event of the weekend, the flyby of the Lynx and World War II aircraft, and it's back to their day jobs, I guess, now. But we're going to be keeping a close eye on the events unfolding in London over the next few months, obviously the key event being the Olympics. And I guess it's worth noting that, I mean, I had some first-hand information come my way last week, which I found very interesting. Haven't been able to verify it, though, so bear that in mind. But I knew somebody that worked at the Gherkin in London, which is obviously one of the main financial buildings of the city, the iconic building. And he was only there in the capacity of an external consultant. Obviously, no more details need to be mentioned. But he was informed last week that the Gherkin would be closed for 2 days, the entire building, as part of a disaster recovery scenario in anticipation for the Olympic Games. And that was apparently exactly the wording they used. They said in anticipation of the Olympic Games, which is very interesting. Yeah. But
so are they almost saying that if something did happen in the Olympic Games and it spread to them, they would be
they
able
would
to
deal with it. Disaster recovery, which is an IT term, which is something that Scott Forbes talked about a lot in our last episode about, in one of our last episodes about the disaster recovery power downs that went on, well, according to Scott Forbes, just before 9/11. So something sort of thing that goes on in these big corporate buildings. It's not unknown, but it's just the timing is very interesting. And if it is true that they closed the entire Gherkin down for 2 days, that's quite significant, because that's a major sort of pain in the arse, basically, for people that work there.
Good old Robbie Williams to come on again. He was, of course, in Live 8 in 2005. Yeah. But are they thinking it would happen in the Gherkin itself, or something, like, if they think about the Olympics, they're referring to the Olympics, it's a separate way away, isn't it? So something happened there, could have a knock-on effect, or...
Well, this is the big thing. I mean, who knows? I mean, he said an email went out. So obviously they have a log of everybody that works at the Gherkin. They know everybody's emails. So an email went out saying whole building is going to be closed for the next 2 days due to a disaster recovery scenario, planning, whatever, rehearsal. And it's to do with preparation for sort of potential things that could happen during the Olympics, which is very interesting.
There's a talk, I couldn't go to it, it was last week, and there is apparently an audio recording online somewhere, or made by somebody, I think it's... Kent Freedom Movement or a group like that. There's a guy who's written a book about 7/7 that was just this week, and you know, he's saying about the false flag type thing of it being done by persons unknown, possibly connected with the government. So whether this is kind of thing is going to happen again, I don't know.
Yeah,
I'll try and get an audio recording of it, maybe not something we'd put out on here, but possibly something we could do a link to, because apparently it was recorded, the talk. He was talking about his book he's written. Unfortunately, I don't have any more information. I can't remember the guy's name offhand. But it just came up this week, interestingly, that he gave this talk.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think a lot of it is snippets of info come through. We just have to make them public and talk about them. And that goes for everybody. If you haven't got a podcast or any kind of blog or any YouTube channel or anything like that, just spread the word. If you find out information, snippets of things that you feel might be notable, just let people know about it, because if something does unfold in London over the next few months, some big event for the Olympics, it's like 9/11 all over again. The key will be in having information for things that occurred before the event, for things, significant pieces of information that may make it easier to sort of solve the puzzle, really, in terms of how it was orchestrated, who done it, etc. I mean, obviously, we are just keeping our eye on things. Our mind isn't made up either way at the moment. I mean, there were some people that were pretty convinced that this weekend for the Queen's Jubilee in London, there was going to be a big sort of ritualistic, terroristic event that was going to create carnage in London. Personally, I was suspicious of that because I felt like it was too early, too much too soon, because what would be the point of the Olympic Games in London if they just did it all during this weekend in June?
Yeah, exactly.
It's way too early. But it was an interesting event. There's certainly a lot of symbolism here. I think there's probably people out there that have done a lot of analysis about all the symbolism of the weekend. We, as I said earlier, aren't necessarily going to go into great depth about that, but we are aware of the symbolism. It is there for people to see. But it's all the symbolism of London, really. It's like you go to London, you see this symbolism. You don't need a big event like this to see it. It's always present. So we're going to continue watching the event on the TV, and really, like I said at the start of this episode, it was just a sort of free-flowing kind of episode that we wanted to just get out there to just provide our insight and thoughts on this weekend, which it has been a significant weekend. It's definitely been historic, and you don't have to be British, I don't think, to see the historic symbolism here.
See how it's used after the event, various souvenir DVDs and brochures, yep, and stuff that will come out, to see how that echoes on up to the Olympics, where it's used to build up an image of Britain which they want to push. And then when the Olympics comes in, you'll have to sort of live up to that image, and if you're not, then it will seem like you're not really backing the game that they're playing. And remember, like I said, the Bilderbergs were going on at the same time as this, even most of the same days, or crossing over the same days, so it's important to remember that while you're watching this, that's going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, absolutely. So just as JLS comes onto the stage, we're going to sign off. So stay tuned for more episodes.
Where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.